Good day, everyone. This is Stephen Cohen with episode 12 of the podcast Quantitative Investigations. I am recording remotely from Albuquerque, New Mexico, because I am on business travel. Therefore, unfortunately, we don't have Goose the Engineer in tow. Besides the fact, he's enjoying a wedding this weekend, which is ridiculous that I allow him any time off at all. But that's just me. This episode is entitled, Are We Losing Our Rights? And the examples I'm going to provide are not centered around one political party or another. At least I'm attempting not to skew this towards one political party or another. But hopefully everyone will see the general applicability of the examples I'm providing. And I am going to cover Donald Trump, although I've covered a lot of how his rights have been violated in other episodes, but this is one that has more general applicability. Also going to cover an example of a gentleman who I knew when I was younger, who is was sentenced to prison for many years. I think he finally got out after 30 years. I'm going to cover also parents' rights, trans rights, and also the rights of those who have undergone gender reassignment surgery at a very young age and now regret it, which is probably one of the most disturbing examples. But let's start with President Trump. The example I'm going to use is the problems he's having right now with Letitia James, who is the current Attorney General of the state of New York. Now, Letitia James ran on prosecuting President Trump. So she was not really in a position of having any information of any crimes that she thinks that he may have committed. But there are plenty of videos. You can actually go to cnn.com/video/politics, and you can find a video in which she makes numerous statements prior to becoming the Attorney General about how she's going to get Trump or sue Trump. She also has, there's also a website called lawandcrime.com where they had a story on Letitia James, and one of her quotes is, "We will use every area of the law to investigate President Trump and his business transactions and that of his family as well." And you can also catch on YouTube, you can look up on YouTube, youtube.com/watch. There is another video of clips and statements of hers prior to becoming Attorney General that she's going to sue Trump or get Trump. My question is, how is this even remotely constitutional? And here is where I bring up the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution says as follows. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. I ask the question, how can an attorney general, who's not even in office yet, campaign on bringing someone to justice when they have no relevant facts? This is called finding the man and then finding the crime. This is specifically unconstitutional. The Fourth Amendment is supposed to prevent that kind of activity. And let me tell you, this can be used against anyone. Any, and has been actually, but any person who somehow runs afoul of a law enforcement official can then find themselves being investigated, being stuck with a crime without the crime actually being committed, or more importantly, there's no reasonable information that should lead to the actual investigation in the first place. How is it legal to run a campaign based on prosecuting someone? Go ahead and prosecute him. You know, you find a crime and you indict them. How is that remotely constitutional? But yet it's happening. And again, if it's happening to President Trump, it can happen to anyone. That should never be allowed in the United States. But let us continue. Kyle Rittenhouse. I think most people know who Kyle Rittenhouse is. He was prosecuted for murder in Kenosha, Wisconsin, because he had obtained a rifle and he was protecting property of someone that he knew. He ended up being attacked. He shot three people, killed two, wounded one, and he gets prosecuted. And he gets prosecuted when the video evidence clearly shows he's being attacked. Clearly. Clearly he did not start a fight. And the laws in Wisconsin, like the laws in most states, if you're being attacked, you're allowed to use deadly force. If you even have the belief that you're about to be harmed without actually being hit yet, if you have the belief you're about to be harmed, you can use deadly force. But Kyle Rittenhouse was harmed. He was hit, knocked down. Someone came at him with a skateboard and was going to hit him over the head with a skateboard. And I can't remember the last person who attacked him actually had a pistol on him. So he ended up killing two people and wounding a third. He was arrested, he was tried, and he was acquitted. But that was a malicious prosecution. They wanted to prosecute him. This happens all the time. I don't understand. And you can tell that the American Bar Association is a politically corrupt organization because they will try and disbar Rudy Giuliani for making certain statements which were actually true, or at least he thought they were true, but didn't actually result in anyone's prosecution. Yet Letitia James, along with Alvin Bragg, and whoever the prosecutor was in Wisconsin, you're talking about malicious prosecutions. And yet they're not being disbarred. The American Bar Association should not be allowed to police itself anymore, because they can't. They are a politically corrupt organization. So in one way, we are losing our rights because the unconstitutional behavior of certain law enforcement people and prosecutors are not being punished. Not being punished. Let me move on. I think most of you who've listened to my previous episodes know that I have a big issue with the way the federal government, or at least federal law enforcement agencies and intelligence agencies have been conducting themselves. And I provide specific information. This one I just found out about recently, and I'm livid. When I was in elementary school and junior high school, I was friends with a gentleman, at that time a boy, named David Taos. David Taos was actually Vietnamese. His father, Richard M. Taos, adopted him from Vietnam during the Vietnam War. Richard M. Taos was a helicopter pilot, and he flew some very dangerous missions. He was awarded a couple of Bronze Stars and a couple of other air medals. Richard M. Taos made the mistake of identifying criminal behavior by the CIA. He actually saw an Air America plane down, and he landed his helicopter to offer assistance. And the Air America people said, no, we'll just wait for an Air America plane or helicopter to come and rescue us. That particular plane was carrying 4,000 pounds of cocaine. this is just the beginning of the investigations that Richard Tauss would do over time into the criminal behavior of the CIA. It was criminal for the CIA to be running drugs, but they did it. Richard Tauss investigated criminal activity on the part of our government with Iran-Contra, an issue with Iraq, other things. And by the late 80s, it came to a head where he was supposed to sign that he, in his job, I left out something that Richard Tauss was after the military. He became an FBI investigator. And he's supposed to sign a document every couple of years saying that he witnessed no illegal activity on the part of the federal government. And this was something he was supposed to sign every couple of years. Well, in the late 80s, I think it was 1988, he did not sign it. And his supervisors were not exactly friendly to him. He was harassed. But then it got really nasty. He was set up. He was set up as a child sex trafficker. There were two boys who actually testified against Richard Tauss, and they were themselves coerced into testifying because they had themselves had some criminal records or some issues with the law. So the federal government got the conviction. It actually happened under the state Nassau County law and Nassau County court and judge. He actually had physical proof that he wasn't even in the location where supposedly this took place in the form of some receipts. And he was sentenced to 90 plus years. I think he's actually out. I think he may have gotten out in 2018. But he lost 30 years of his life. 30 years of his life. And I know this man because I played on his soccer team with David Tauss. I have one championship trophy in my whole public school career. And it was from the team I was on, with coached by Richard Tauss. And I didn't get to play the last four games, including the playoffs and the championship, because I incurred a serious concussion. I was a goalie, and I was a pretty insane goalie, and I incurred a serious concussion. Put me in the hospital for 3 days, and I don't even remember the event. As a matter of fact, no one can account for my whereabouts between 5 p.m. when practice ended and 8 o'clock when I showed up at my house. I didn't even snap out of it. I don't remember anything from the midday in school to waking up in the hospital, and I sat up on a gurney as I'm being wheeled to my room. I'm looking around. This is at Mercy Hospital in Rockville Center. I get up in the gurney. I'm looking around saying, where the hell am I? And the nurse says, you better lie back down, son. You're hurt. That's all I remember. But this man was a great soccer coach. I'm in the hospital. He comes in, brings me three comics and I think some candy. He sat with me for about a half hour to an hour. He was a great man. And they sent him away to prison because he would not sign a document saying that he did not observe any illegal activity by the federal government. He's not the only one who was sent away, by the way, because of this. The CIA and the FBI were pretty filthy back then. And guess what? It hasn't changed. If anything, it's gotten worse. They went from illegal activity to trying actually overturning presidential elections. Are we losing our rights? Let's move on. Let's move on. There's the issue of school boards. One of my favorites. So, Loudoun County, Virginia, Loudoun, particularly Loudoun County Public Schools, that was the epicenter of the anti-school board movement because of some of the things they did, which, by the way, including allowing trans girls to go to the bathroom in girls' rooms, which resulted in two girls being raped by a trans girl. And Loudoun County public school system, including the superintendent, hid this from the parents and hid this from the police. But because of the anti-critical race theory, anti-transgenderism movement that happened, started in 2020, I'd have to say, but maybe came to a head in 20. I'd say that happened. Came to a head in 2021. School board meetings started getting raucous, and this resulted in a letter being sent by the National School Boards Association. This letter was sent, and anyone can download it. I urge everyone to read it. September 29th of 2021. It's addressed from the National School Boards Association to President Biden. In this letter, they are actually calling for any violence or threats against school boards to be considered domestic terrorism. And they actually cite, and I'll read you the sentence, as these acts of malice, violence, and threats against public school officials have increased, the classification of these heinous actions could be the equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes. Okay? This is the National School Board Association. As it came out, the NSBA actually coordinated with the White House to write this letter. As it came out. The letter actually cites around 20 instances of what they call threats. Most of the threats were parents being very, very vocal and disrupting board meetings because of the continuous mask requirements, closing of schools, teaching a critical race theory, which this letter denies that school boards were imposing critical race theory, but that denial is in of itself a lie, because there are just too many examples that are being cited where critical race theory is being taught in schools. And also the vaccines. So most of the, you can read the letter, there's about 20 instances. I think only a few actually have to do with threats against school board members. Now, were there threats made against school board members? Yeah, there certainly were. Trying to find this letter. I had a letter. I saw a handwritten note that threatened to kill a school board member that was sent to one of the Loudoun County public school board members. There absolutely were threats, but most of the time it was parents getting very angry at school boards. And you know what? They had a right. Parents have a right to get angry at school board members if they're not doing the correct things. So what happens? The NSBA writes this letter, and then Department of Justice, under Merrick Garland, issues a memo basically saying that the department takes, and this memo was written October 4th, 2021, from the Attorney General, and it's basically saying the department takes these incidents seriously and is committed to using its authority and resources to discourage these threats, identify them when they occur, and prosecute them when appropriate. So, Yeah, the NSBA implicating parents who get angry at school board meetings as domestic terrorists, and now the DOJ is going to get on their case. And there was a case in Grand Junction, Colorado, where a woman, and this woman's name is, where are you? Sharona Bishop, Grand Junction, Colorado. An FBI SWAT team raided her home and handcuffed her husband, and supposedly because they wanted to prosecute the parents who may have made threats and made harassing phone calls to school board members. It was a pretty brutal entry. She was at home with her three children, and they physically assaulted their 18-year-old daughter and handcuffed the husband. And yet, somehow, what did she do? It doesn't really say. Unfortunately, the article doesn't say why she was arrested. She hasn't been charged with anything. This was a November of 2021 incident. But she's never been charged with anything. They just broke into her house. Are we losing our rights? Again, I want everyone to realize, that these are not political party issues. I mean, it was mostly conservatives speaking up at school boards, not always, but mostly. But if school boards are teaching our children things that have nothing to do with what they really need to be successful in life, and are creating racists, and are allowing girls to be raped. And let me tell you, Loudoun County, Virginia, is not a bastion of conservatism. Northern Virginia itself is pretty liberal. But basically, Northern Virginia flipped the governorship from Democrat to Republican, mostly on this issue. This is a crossover issue. I don't know when school boards thought that they had all this power to do stuff. I don't know how that happened. But yet, that's what they think. The Richard Tauss situation. By the way, if you want to read about it, David Tauss has written a book called Stolen Valor. I have not read this book. I am considering buying it. I would like to reach out to David, because I haven't seen David since high school graduation. I'm not even sure I saw him then. We kind of went our ways at the end of junior high school. But there is a book on the whole Richard Tauss issue called Stolen Valor. So the DOJ, I think, has taken a step back because they realized the constitutional implications of all this. And actually, interestingly enough, the NSBA has issued an apology for writing the letter, admitting that they used language they shouldn't have used. Their apology, as far as I'm concerned, their apology is not accepted. It was a political ploy. It was done in coordination with the White House. Everybody knew that they were going to do it. It's from the administration. So, parents' rights at school boards. We're going to start getting into the trans issues now. One of the most disturbing issues with our kids these days is gender reassignment surgery. There is a disgusting cabal of doctors and maybe mental health professionals who think this, and politicians, of course, who think that gender reassignment surgery for children is acceptable. Yeah, my opinion right now is just my opinion, but that's disgusting. And anyone who thinks otherwise needs to read up on Chloe Cole. Okay? Now, before I get to Chloe, make sure everyone understands, there's a difference between transgenderism and homosexuality. Homosexuality has been around probably for as long as people have been around. It's in the Bible. The Bible is over 5,000 years old. I mean, by Bible, I mean the Torah, the Old Testament. You know, it was written during the Babylonian exile of Israel. So I just want to check one thing here. How long ago did Babylonia conquer Israel? I think it is around 3,000 BC. No, I was wrong. The Siege of Jerusalem. Okay, so that happened 600 BC. I thought it was older than that. 600 BC. So we're talking 2,600 years ago, right? We'll say 2,700 years ago. That's how old that's when the Torah was actually put down in words. Obviously, Judaism goes back way before then, 5,000 years, probably over 5,000 years ago. So homosexuality has been around for a long time. And it's discussed in the Torah. When you look at the premise of ordered liberty, and this is a legal theory that I first heard about in the Roe versus Wade decision, written by liberals. So ordered liberty, again, if a certain right has been around for a very long time, then that right is deemed to exist. That right is deemed to exist. So gay rights, you know, the rights of homosexuals, based on ordered liberty, should be protected. Homosexuality has been, again, it's been around for a long time, when I was in high school, when I was a senior in high school, a good friend of mine told me he was gay, and I said, "How do you know?" And his response was, "Yeah, it's the kind of thing you know when you're young." So he first figured it out when he maybe like around fifth grade. He first figured it out. So something like that is a genetic, biochemical phenomenon. And I'm not going to say all homosexuals are genetically or biochemically homosexual, but there's certainly, I would say, I'm not going to say most, I don't know what the proportion is, but it's a significant proportion of homosexuals who are genetically or biochemically predisposed to be homosexual. Can't help it. They have rights. If homosexuality has been around for thousands and thousands of years, homosexuals have rights. All right? When you get to transgenderism, this is a different ball game. And when you get to when you start chopping up little girls and changing them when they're 13, that is physical abuse. That is child abuse in the realm of being a Joseph Mengele. That's how disgusting and despicable this is. I'm going to read some quotes these are some quotes from Chloe Cole. She testified at a California assembly hearing because California wants to be a sanctuary for minors seeking sex change operations. She goes, "I will never be able to breastfeed a child." And mind you, just to give you some complete the picture. She had surgery to turn her from a girl to a boy. So she goes, I will never be able to breastfeed a child. I have blood clots in my urine. I am unable to fully empty my bladder. I do not yet know if I am capable of carrying a child to full term. Okay. Cole said that when her parents sought help when she told them at age 13 that she wanted to be a boy. They were pressured to agree with her. She goes, my parents were given the threat of suicide as a reason to move me forward in my transition. At 15, Cole asked to have her breasts removed. She attended a class with other teen girls who said they wanted to be boys. None of us were going to be men. We were fleeing from the uncomfortable feeling of becoming women. She says, I was unknowingly physically cutting off my true self from my body irreversibly and painfully. Our trans identities were not questioned. She says, despite having therapists and attending the top surgery class, I really didn't understand all the ramifications of any of the medical decisions I was making. I wasn't capable of understanding, and it was downplayed consistently. This woman was chopped up when she was in her teens, now regrets it. Yet the sick, demented politicians in California and Colorado, Jared Polis, Phil Weiser, they want to allow this. This is insane. But yet this is being pushed by some very twisted people. Now, what does this have to do with rights? This girl's rights have been violated. She no longer has the right to be a woman. She lost the right to be a woman. That right was stripped from her by doctors. Doctors stripped her rights. Now, mind you, her parents could have used a little bit more common sense. I don't care what threat of suicide. I would never have allowed any of my children to physically change their sex while they were 18, until they were 18. Then their lives were theirs. That's what I've always told them. And I know there are two friends of mine whose children are trans. One's trans male. The other one's trans female. They did it after they were 18. There's not much you can do. I would question who put these thoughts in their heads in the first place. Again, it's one thing to be homosexual. I mean, if you're a girl and you're homosexual, okay, but you're still a girl. A homosexual man is still a man. It's the transgenderism that just takes it to a whole new level. Now you get to trans rights, right? Most people probably know about Riley Gaines. She was a swimmer. She swam against Leah Thomas, who is a man, biological man, and beat her. So now we're allowing biological men to compete against women. Are women losing their rights? Damn right they are. Absolutely. I mean, women fought to have their sports, and now their sports are being taken away or being perverted by allowing trans women or biological men to compete. Now, here's the dirty little secret. If any lawsuit goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court will most likely shoot down trans rights will most likely shoot it down because of ordered liberty. Women have been allowed to be women since the beginning of women. A woman's right to be able to change in a locker room with other biological women has always been a right. for a very long time. A right of women to be able to compete in women's only sports and not compete with biological men has been a right since at least Title IX. So, the right of biological men to dress as women and then play sports as a woman and then shower with women, exposing themselves to women in the women's locker room or bathrooms, that is not a right that's going to pass the ordered liberty legal theory. It will not pass. It will be struck down by the Supreme Court, as well as it should. As well as it should. Because, and this leads to an overarching premise of liberty. Your liberty stops where mine starts. Your rights stop where my rights begin. You don't have a right to infringe on my rights while exercising your rights. It's a basic premise. And the Supreme Court is going to shoot it down. So, those are just some examples of how, in my opinion, everybody is losing rights in this country. And everybody needs to pay attention. Everybody needs to pay attention. Let's go for another example, shall we? Let's talk about digital currency. Specifically, the central bank digital currency. So basically, the Federal Reserve wants to do is get rid of paper dollars or coined cash, and they want to go to a digital dollar. So how does that infringe upon someone's rights? Well, what it means is that every transaction will be traceable, and you won't have a choice in that matter. Now, let's go a little Orwellian. If you have a card that has your digital currency on it, can't the federal government go ahead and regulate what it is you buy? If they don't like guns, can't they disallow you from using your digital currency to buy guns? Where is this constitutional? By the way, it's also a Fourth Amendment violation, because it's an unwarranted search. The federal government doesn't have the right to do unwarranted searches. Does it not? Of course not. So, we're losing our right to privacy. We're losing our right to be secure in our homes, papers, and what I can't remember whatever else the Fourth Amendment says. We're losing it. We're losing that freedom. And for no good reason. Although it does cost money, albeit it costs a lot of money to maintain hard currency. You know what? That's one of the few constitutional responsibilities of federal government, and that's something we can fund, as opposed to all the other waste that we fund. So what else? How else are we losing our rights? What about eliminating industries? Where in the Constitution does it say the federal government has the right to eliminate gas appliances? Where does it mandate in the Constitution that the federal government has the right to insist on electric cars? It doesn't. It doesn't have that right. The federal government is making it up. They do not have the right to completely torch industries, especially when a lot of it's being done under the false pretenses of anthropogenic climate change. They don't have that right. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say that they can destroy commerce. They're doing it under false pretenses. And again, on the surface, this might seem like a political issue. Oh, I'm just a conservative, so I'm complaining about, you know, gasoline and using my natural gas appliances. No, I'm not. Because poor people have to put up with this. Low income, the federal government is going to force lower income people to abandon their gasoline cars and buy electric cars. At the same time, the U.S. federal government is destroying the national electrical grid by infusing it with inefficient and also almost essentially useless electrical generation, wind and solar, which can't, and it's useless when it comes to surge capacity. We've already had this discussion. This is episode 2 on energy policy. And I'll have to go back and do another episode on energy policy because a certain geochemist is challenging me on it. And I'm going to handle my response through through my podcast. But lower income people are going to be forced to abandon their electric cars, abandon their gasoline powered cars, buy electrical cars. At the same time, we're making our grid more unreliable with wind and solar. So this is not a political issue. This issue spans political parties. It's a class issue, number one. But why should I be subjected to buy an electric vehicle? I don't want one. I go on long trips, 1,000 miles. I'll drive 1,000 miles a day with my wife. We'll go from Colorado Springs to Florida. We've done it 4 times. Well, 3 times, and then once to Maryland and New York from Colorado Springs. I don't want to have to pull over every 200 miles and wait a half hour for my car to charge. Why would I want that? Besides the fact that we've also destroyed the alternative automobile propulsion industry, because we could have gone to the hydrogen fuel cell, which actually would be a far superior means of automobile propulsion than batteries, than battery operated cars. Far superior. But the government's mandating this. They're taking away our rights, our right to choose, our right to engage in free commerce. They're taking it away. Centralizing decisions. So, I mean, I hope I've demonstrated today that we are losing our rights, and it's not just one political party. We are all losing our rights. And all I can say is elections matter. Elections matter. That's all I can say. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. And I do appreciate those who are frequent listeners to this podcast. I think I've had around over 160 downloads, which I know is not breaking any land speed records, but it's probably 150 more than I expected. And I'm going to keep going. If anyone has any suggestions for topics, you can contact me through my email. Should be available on the various platforms. But anyone has any suggestions, let me know. And from that, I will bid everyone a fond adieu.